Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. New unemployment claims are down. Care to bet on next week? Retail sales are up for the second consecutive month, including a 6.5% increase at Nordstrom's. Cliff Clavin, he was funny on Cheers, stupid on Jeopardy, and is even dumber in Washington. A scientific study has demonstrated that obesity is linked to certain cancers, and two of the top three are those that women get much more than men. A coincidence? I think not. It turns out some packages of beef may be even more likely to kill you than others. The AARP backs Democratic health reform bill, but still can't find Osama bin Laden. The House of Representatives votes to make credit card issuers less evil, more quickly. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. Those subjects and more will be covered ere this hour passes. And we have a special guest tonight, Jerry Gettinger, who, among other roles, is president of the Arizona chapter of the National Jewish Democratic Council. He and I will talk with you, if you wish, but certainly with each other about economics, politics, and we might even touch on healthcare financing reform. If there's time this evening, we'll talk about oregano oil and acne, and if you understand that, you know too much. And additionally, I wanted to talk to you about two books that I've just finished that you might like. We have News of the Weird, and we will also talk about next week's guest toward the end of the show. So stay with us, but first, that cup of coffee feels great in your hands. The aroma goes right to your brain as you breathe it in. The cabin's warming up for the family because you had the foresight to get the fireplace going, and now the smell of that wood is mixing with your coffee. It took time and it took work to get to the point that you could just get up and go to your cabin whenever you wished to. But it also took being smart. You were smart enough, for example, to know that if you're in business and have a website, you're more in business when you're also blogging. You went to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and chose Blog Wizardry to write your blogs for you. It was inexpensive, it was well done, and it increased traffic to your website and your company. Even though that cabin's getting nice and toasty, you can hear the wind blowing through the trees and get a sense of brisk outside air. What was that noise? You go to the window. It's a doe and her fawn. It's going to be a good day. Blog Wizardry, jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. Welcome back. We'll talk to you a little bit about some of those news stories. The unemployment claims, new unemployment claims, first-time claimants, are down, as we've discussed before on this show, and as our guest later will probably weigh in on. That's one of those numbers that will go up and down until the economy is really operating at full steam. By the by, if you'd like to join us, either now or when our guest is on, you can call in to 347-994-3796. That's our caller number, and you're welcome to do that anytime we're on, and we'll try to take you as soon as possible after you ring in. We talked about a recent scientific study that has been announced. In fact, it was in the New York Times today that obesity has now been linked to several specific types of cancer, which is to say that if one is obese, they are more likely to get these kinds of cancers. I mentioned at the top of the show that two of those three cancers are types that women get much more than men. You've already guessed one, which is breast cancer. And the other one, which women tend to get more than men, is kidney cancer. A number of other cancers, again, are more likely if an individual is obese. And those include colorectal cancer and, of course, I mentioned kidney and breast cancer. Obviously, although relatively few men do get breast cancer, it's more likely in men who are obese as well. We mentioned Cliff Clavin. Here's what that story really is about. The actor who played Cliff Clavin, John Ratzenberger, addressed the teabaggers today at a demonstration they had that was led by wacky Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. And I say wacky, by the way, without any fear of correction or retribution. In any event, at this meeting, this rally, Mr. Ratzenberger said that the Democrats' health care financing bill is socialism, and socialism is a failed philosophy from overseas. For those of you who have been studying your history, this may be a bit of a surprise to someone like Norman Thomas. But that aside, there's a whole other argument about the degree of socialism in that bill, and more correctly, there really isn't any. The packages of beef that we were referring to that might be dangerous for you has to do with a story that was in the news. There has been a recall of some beef packages, and that occurred recently because of E. coli. Recall was voluntary. It began earlier this week, and they were recalling 500,000 of ground beef because, of a link to bacteria, and specifically E. coli, which was linked to at least 2 deaths, and undoubtedly a bunch of other people got sick. And most of this is in the Northeast or Mid-Atlantic states. But if you have any question, you can call the U.S. Department of Agriculture that's local to you, and they will let you know whether the package you bought is a problem. E. coli is a bacteria that gets on occasionally produce, but more commonly on meat. And the reason for that is because meat, at the risk of sounding obvious, it comes from animals. And animals do those things, do that thing, which tends to pass the bacteria. That thing to which we refer is what a bear does in the woods. And when that material comes into contact with food, since a lot of the that material does contain that bacteria, it can connect with the meat, and as I said, occasionally produce, and cause that kind of problem. We also mentioned the AARP and wanted to make further reference to that. The reference was to a joke that we did a long time ago, which was that if the United States really wants to find Osama bin Laden, all they have to do is tell the AARP that he's turned 50. And they managed to find everybody. I'm past 50 now, but just past my 50th birthday, I mean just past, like within days, I got the first notice from AARP that I should join. As said, they can find pretty much everybody. Legislation was passed in the House of Representatives today, and that legislation is designed to move forward the protections that were earlier created in legislation that was passed by both houses of Congress and signed by President Obama to limit credit card issuers in what they could do in terms of certain charges. Because that bill doesn't go into effect for several months, the credit card companies have probably put something in your mailbox that you haven't read if you're a credit card customer. And what it is it talks about increasing certain fees that they won't be able to increase after the legislation goes into effect, so they're taking advantage of this opportunity now. You have the right to opt out of the charges that the credit card companies are indicating they'll charge. But if you do, you can no longer use the credit card, and you have to pay off your balance within 5 years. Probably not a major crisis for some people, but a big problem for others. And that's basically what's happening with that. So the House legislation, if it passes the Senate as well, and there is a similar but somewhat different bill wending its way through the Senate, offered originally by Senator Chris Dodd, which is a little ironic because he's... he is to the banks what Joe Lieberman is to the insurance companies, and as a rule. However, Senator Dodd is running for re-election and may be in some trouble, so I think he's trying to look more like a populist. I think he's a good senator overall, but he has been a little bit in the pocket of banks. In any event, he's sponsoring the legislation in the Senate, and once both bills are passed and reconciled, and if, presuming the president signs it, then that will move up the effective date of that legislation and further limit credit card companies. the additional things I wanted to tell you about or talk about, and you're welcome to share with us. Let me give out the number again. It's 347-994-3796. And if this is the first time you're listening to the show, welcome. Sometimes we have a couple of callers. Sometimes we have none. And that's perfectly fine. Either way, if you'd prefer to listen rather than call in, that's okay. And, of course, if you're listening to us from our archive, you clearly can't call in now, but you can certainly call in next time. Oh, and speaking of calling in and the program, for those of you outside the Mountain time zone, and that's probably most of you, we are on at a different time tonight. Because, and I said outside of the Mountain time zone, more correctly, outside of any area that doesn't change back and forth with standard time. If you're not in one of those time zones, for example, if you're in California, when you've been hearing the show previously at 8 p.m., it is now 7:10, but it started at 7 o'clock in the Pacific time zone. And going to the East Coast, if you previously listened to us at 11, it started tonight at 10. This is a temporary time change, and next week we go into a more permanent time change, which I'll explain in a moment. But the temporary time change, it was just this week because of the fact that the time changed from daylight saving to standard time in the rest of the country. Next week, we are going to be on a half hour still earlier. So taking that to Pacific and Eastern, we'll be at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and it is our plan to stay at that for the duration. So if you want to tune in next week, you'll have to start at 6:30. If you're in the Pacific zone, 9:30 on the East Coast. And that's what's happening next week. And I believe that we probably have with us now Jerry Gettinger, who is, among other things, the president of the Arizona, Jerry, help me, Arizona chapter of the National, I know that, you're the president of the Arizona chapter of the National Jewish Democratic Council, correct?
Right, that's right.
Okay, all right.
It's not right, that's correct. We're left.
Okay. It's anything but right, but it is correct. All right, good. And Jerry has a degree in economics from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and has worked on Wall Street, was born in South Texas, and is very active in the Democratic Party. He lives here in Arizona, where the show is coming from, and was very active in getting a Democrat elected to the area around Scottsdale and Fountain Hills, who is still in Congress, was a former mayor of Scottsdale, Harry Mitchell. And in addition to that, you're a state committee person. Yes, sir.
He was the mayor of Tempe.
I am sorry, you are right, the mayor of Tempe. Okay. For those of you who are not in Arizona, they're very close. anyway, Jerry, yes, you were going to say something, please.
Yeah, first of all, we were really pleased to be able to reelect a Democrat from this area for the first time in 20 years.
Right.
No Democrat has served two consecutive terms in the House from here, and we have a majority of the Democrats serving in the House from Arizona, and that's not happened in a long time.
That's right, and so that's clear. What you're referring to is the fact that the majority of the House delegation from Arizona consists of Democrats, unlike the Senate representation where there are two Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. And just for some history, tell our audience what the history of party politics is in Arizona in terms of Republican and Democrat, in terms of dominance, if you would.
Well, for the past umpteen years, Arizona has been very Republican. It's been about a 4 or 5 to 1 registration Republican over Democrat. And in most places, the Republican registered voter is still in the majority, but we're catching up.
Right.
And we're catching up quickly.
Mm-hmm. It's worth remembering for those who know historic figures that two major Republicans from Arizona, the earliest major Republican from Arizona was Barry Goldwater, who ran for and lost the president. He was the first Arizonan to run for president and lose. And also Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yes, yes. Who served a very distinguished career on the Supreme Court and was, and looking back, was a person who used a great deal of judgment in her opinions.
That's right. That's right. She was for many years the swing voter on the court on certain issues, and not least of which was abortion rights.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. Before we go into more politics, Jerry, economics, of course, is something that you know a good deal about. And I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, we were talking about, among other things, new unemployment claims and retail sales, retail chains are reporting increased sales. What's your reaction to that?
Well, the sales figures were pretty much as expected, very disappointing. We're all hanging on what the unemployment figures will be, which come out tomorrow, which will probably be horrible. One of the problems that Mr. Obama faces is I fear he spent too much money on Wall Street and not enough on Main Street. And the end result is that the stock market and the brokerage houses and the banks are in a fool's paradise while the rest of us are wondering when's it going to end.
I understand. So you're kind of a pessimist on the economy at the moment.
I'm very skeptical of these people who keep saying we're recovering, and you look around the area here, and the problem that now is starting to become overwhelming is the commercial real estate problem. I think I read in the local Arizona paper where something like 35% to 40% of the rentable space is vacant here in Arizona now.
Right, and that's pretty much happening nationally, isn't it?
All over the country, yeah. The largest apartment complex in Manhattan, the Peter Stuyvesant, the owner is walking away because he can't afford the payments. And
right.
They've got a problem. They don't have enough money for fuel for the winter for the apartment complex.
And, of course, there are people living there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Right. Even though there's a lot of empty space, there are a lot of people living there, and if you don't have fuel for the building, theoretically, people would go cold during the winter.
That's right. Then it winds up with the banks owning it, and the banks wind up with the same problem with commercial real estate they had with subprime mortgages.
Mm-hmm. What's your response to the recently reported increase in the gross domestic product?
I think most of that was the stimulus, the government spending. If you look real closely. Not to get too technical, but if you look real closely at the earnings that have come out, they're
right.
Not based on increased business. What they are based upon increased reductions in costs, such as layoffs and two jobs for one person type thing. And that's
the so-called productivity increases that they talked about earlier today.
Yeah. Some would call it productivity. The other would call it slave labor.
Well, I was just going to refer to that. You know, with perhaps less colorful language, but nonetheless, the fact is that when people talk about increases in productivity, what they're really talking about is beating your employees up by giving them too much work and too little time.
That's right. By expecting them to do more for the same amount of money is the bottom line.
Right. Well, let me ask you, because it occurred to me today when I heard that. Although that's really lousy for the existing employees, and it's certainly bad for people who don't have a job, might that be an indicator that re-employment or increased employment is down the road just a little bit? Because you can only press people so far before you get them screaming at you if you're the boss.
Well, the first thing you need is more business.
Right.
And we're not seeing that yet. We're not seeing increased revenue. All we're seeing is increased earnings and government money coming into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
The retail sales figures
doesn't the increased money from the government? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, the retail sales figures that we just saw that for the last month or so were terrible. They were like, in some cases, 10, 12, 15% below expectations. And that means that our economy, and usually that's a good leading indicator for Christmas sales.
Right.
And you had back-to-school sales that were very bad. And now you walk into a store like Walmart or Target, and they got Christmas music going and everything, and they're not doing any business in Christmas. They're selling groceries, that's all.
Yeah, groceries will, to some extent, always sell, right?
Right.
The report that came out today that I was reporting on earlier was that the retail sales were actually up for the second consecutive month at the more upscale stores, Nordstrom, Saks, and all of the, well, Saks was a little bit less, but Nordstrom's and some of the others, more luxury goods, were selling. They were all up.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, besides the assumption that the rich will always spend, they in fact did have reduction in sales for a long time, and now it is turning around. Is that perhaps an indicator of what may happen in the rest of the retail market, or you think it's just an anomaly?
I think it's an anomaly, and I think if you look closely, you'll see that while they're up on a month-to-month basis, they weren't up on a year-to-year basis.
Okay.
They're still below what they were a year ago.
Sure.
And there are a group of people who have money and will continue to have money regardless of what the economy does. And when they have money, they spend, and they spend at Nordstrom's. The rest of the population is really having a tough time of it right now. It's a lot of hurt out there, a lot of hurt.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. Besides the people who are unemployed, there are a lot of people who are underemployed.
And then there are those that have dropped out of the sales force altogether.
You mean the workforce?
I mean the workforce. Alan Abelson, about 4 weeks ago in Barron's, which is a weekly news magazine, had an article dissecting the unemployment rate. And based upon those that do not look for jobs, those that are underemployed, part-time workers who want... Anyway, he came up with a figure of 26% unemployment rate.
Okay.
Which is just a mind-boggling figure.
It is, but isn't it also true that in every cycle of the economy, when you're looking at, and obviously I'm not an economist, I'm really asking the question because, frankly, I'm seeking to learn from you and letting everybody who's listening also learn. Doesn't it also always happen in the cycle of the economy that when unemployment is X percent, if you include all of those categories that Abelson was talking about in Barron's, that the actual rate is always going to be substantially higher. And so when you're talking about just an unemployment rate, you're really just using it as a comparison, not necessarily that it's a full story?
Well, that's partially true. I think but what's different this time is it's not just that people have lost their jobs. Jobs have gone away.
Right.
If the economy starts to pick up, there are no jobs for these people who would want to work. Whereas before, they were just, factories were idle, they weren't closed down.
Okay, I was just going to say, when you're talking about jobs having gone away, you're really talking about industries having either, you know, effectively gone under or jobs having gone overseas, right?
Yeah, overseas, down south. You name it, but it's just not there anymore.
Right. Okay, before we go on, Lynn, I wanted to talk to you about politics in just a second, but for anyone who wishes to join us, the number that they can do so at, if you'll forgive the tortured syntax, is 347-994-3796. How did you get from a farm in South Texas to end up in the Phoenix metro area?
Well, I was born and raised. My father had a very large farm down there during the Second World War, and I went away to military prep school. And from there, I went to an Ivy League college, and then from there to New York, and then Wound up in Beverly Hills to finish out my career and retired there and moved to Scottsdale.
Well, here you are. And when you said your career, you worked in finance?
Corporate finance, yes. I was head of a division on Wall Street for a major firm. And then I went back out in the field and was sort of the cleanup guy for putting out fires at the company.
Great. And in terms of politics, have you been involved in politics your whole life?
Just about, yes. I remember handing out leaflets for L.A. Stevenson. So I would say that, yeah, I've been, most of my life, I've been involved in politics. And
okay.
All of my life, I've been a Democrat.
Is there any other party? Never mind. For those who don't know, Adlai Stevenson was governor of Illinois and ran twice for president in 1952 and 1956 against Dwight Eisenhower, who beat him rather badly both times. The sole way that most people remember Adlai Stevenson now is that a freeway was named after him in Chicago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he was really a terrific guy.
He's probably the last honorable politician.
Okay, well, that may generate some disagreement. I'm not sure I would agree with that, but he was certainly among the smartest and most cerebral politicians
yes.
we have ever had.
Yes, without a doubt.
And I remember as a child going around to my relatives asking who they wanted to have as president. Kennedy was already nominated in the Democratic Party. And one of my relatives said, Adlai Stevenson. I said, well, he's not running. And she said, well, it doesn't matter. You ask me who I want. Many people were committed to Stevenson for years and years and years.
Well, you see, your household was different. I was the only Democrat in my household. The rest
of
my household were Republicans.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Well, but when you were growing up in Texas, being a Republican was kind of unusual, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, it was, you know, it was, you were a Democrat, whether you're a conservative Democrat or a liberal Democrat,
right.
You were a Democrat. But,
right.
But not my family. My family was Republican. I remember my father being very proud of the fact he voted for Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Wow. Was that a custom? Well, I don't know how long your ancestors were in Texas and in the country, but was that also because at some point in time that had been, many people don't know this, I suppose, for many, many years, the Republican Party, at least in the South, was the more liberal party than the Democrats, going back to Lincoln, of course.
I wouldn't call my family liberal, no.
Oh, well, that answers that question. Okay. They were beyond John Conley Democrats to the point of being Republicans before John Conley was.
Right. And I've got a sister who she and her husband still swear we'd won the Vietnam War and been for the press.
I didn't hear you. That we would have won the Vietnam War, but not had it not been for the press?
Yes. That's my sister's point.
Yeah, I understand. So tell me about the National Jewish Democratic Council.
Well,
tell us what that is.
It is a rather liberal organization. I personally had felt as if in this area there was a need for an organization that voiced a rather center of the road opinion among the Jewish community. I got a little bit upset at AIPAC, American Israel Pacific
Political Action Committee. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they supported Rick Santorum in Pennsylvania. And
right.
I felt like they moved a little bit too far to the right. And I looked around, and this was an organization that seemed very middle of the road. It's got three basic precepts. One is women's birth rights, defender of Israel, and separation of church and state.
To which we all say amen.
Yeah, well, not everybody, but a lot of us do. And those are the three types of approaches that sort of hit a nerve with me. And so I started the organization out here in Arizona.
But it is a national organization. It already existed in much of the country, but you started the Arizona chapter along with some other people.
Exactly.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, your turn.
One of the problems I should point out when we're talking in this manner is that you don't have when you have someone face to face is, and we don't really think about this, but when you have someone face to face, of course, you can see when they're about to speak or when they're done. You can see that by gestures and facial expressions and so forth. But when we're on a medium like this, you can't see that. So there's a tendency to talk over each other, and I apologize for that. But in terms of the council, what does it actually do? I mean, I understand what its views are. Is it a very active organization?
Well, we were very active during this last election cycle. We had house parties for several of the candidates, raised monies and such. We spoke at organizations. We had the candidates speaking to us. And to our members in terms of what they stood for. We came out with public support for several local issues, and we were very instrumental in helping a couple of the candidates get elected. We weren't the reason, but we were in there fighting for them, and somehow or another it worked.
Yeah, we definitely got a majority, didn't we?
And I think we should really tip our hats to George Bush. He really did a lot for us this year.
That's right. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the news came out that he was moving into a new career as a motivational speaker. And we pointed... Go ahead.
I said I'd say he would be.
Yeah, and we pointed out. I mean, that part is quite the case. But we at that point made the comment that he would probably be very good at it because of all the people. I mean, by way of example, look at all the people he motivated to vote for Barack Obama. So he had to be good at that process. And speaking of Obama, was the National Jewish Democratic Council involved? Well, I shouldn't say were they involved. Were they in support of Obama?
On the national level, Ira Foreman, who was director, was very active and very involved, spent a lot of time traveling around the country speaking to Jewish groups about Obama, dispelling some of the vile rumors that went around. And it turned out that Obama and the Democratic Party got a larger percentage of the Jewish vote this time than they have in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Which is kind of amazing because when Secretary Clinton was a candidate, there were, as you were making reference to, there were a lot of really negative comments made about Obama being anti-Semitic and anti-Israel and the rest of it. But that was clearly turned around pretty well by the election.
Yeah, and by the appointments, he's made sense. You know, it's,
sure.
To the staffs, that sort of dispelled a lot of those rumors right away.
Right. And you're referring to Rahm Emanuel, who actually was born in Israel, I believe.
Yeah, he served in the Israeli army.
Yeah. You don't get much more Israeli than that. So that definitely made a difference. The other question I was going to ask you is, are you familiar at all with the name Norman Podoritz, if I'm pronouncing that correctly?
Sure. Norman Podoritz, yes.
Okay. Did I mispronounce it? Do you know?
I've heard it pronounced five different ways.
Okay. Well, I actually haven't heard it pronounced a lot. I've just read some of this, a good deal about it. He was on the air on a radio station the other day on a radio show with a rabbi, and he was talking about how Jews in particular, and I don't want to make this discussion just about Jews and politics, but the Jews in particular were making had made a big mistake in supporting Obama, and it was in liberal causes generally, and it was in the self-interest of Jews to stop being so liberal and stop supporting Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if you'd heard any of that, and I'd like your reaction.
There's a group of neocons that started the movement, as a matter of fact, who were Jewish. And they had previously been very liberal Democrats, and they got, according to a couple of them, they got fed up with what was going on, et cetera, and became started the movement. And the person who just recently died, whose name escapes me, it was one of the founders of it, along with how do you pronounce it? Norman.
Fedorich? Yeah, yeah. Well, the only one I can think of, that, and I don't know if this is the one you're thinking of, was Irving Kristol.
Yeah,
so,
Kristol.
That's the guy who died, yeah.
William Kristol and his father, Irving.
Right.
And Irving, I believe, just passed away recently.
That's correct.
And,
yeah.
And
Bill Kristol is on the Sunday Talk Fest on ABC.
Right. And he still insists that we were really in right going into Iraq. And I hear a man like that who is educated and obviously very bright and I thought open-minded talk like that, and I wonder what's he been smoking.
Yeah. Well, Bill Kristol is not open-minded.
He's a
dyed-in-the-wool doctrinaire, very far right winger. Mm. I mean, by far, very far right. I don't mean he's, you know, trying to put people in camps or anything, but I mean he's very, very, very conservative. And
but he's become more so as time has gone on. He wasn't always that way.
Okay. For as long as I've heard and seen him, he's been that far right. What do you think of the elections that just took place in terms of what it means for the Democratic Party and the Republican Party? And the elections I'm referring to are Virginia and New Jersey and the district up in upstate New York, District 23.
I think
reaction?
Obama has made some rather bad mistakes, and it goes back to Main Street versus Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got people who are trying very hard to come up with enough money, pay the mortgage, read about bonuses of $100 million and things like that, you're not going to vote for the guy who gave them the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unless they switch gears, and pretty dramatically, that we Democrats are going to have a tough time in a year from now.
What do you think of the Democratic victory in northern New York, the upstate New York race?
It was an anomaly. You know, you had the Republicans just killing each other right and left, the conservatives, and then the Republicans supported the Democrat. It was like Texas politics, as I remember. and I don't think it really means anything. It meant anything at all. I think more importantly was New Jersey.
Well, the truth is, I was hoping that John Corzine would win in New Jersey and that the conservative would win in upstate New York. And I'll tell you why. First off, just because I would have preferred the Democrats win in New Jersey. But a victory by the conservative in upstate New York would have, I think, led even more to fratricidal battle in the Republican Party, internecine, I guess, battle in the Republican
right.
Party. And with that defeat, I think it'll still go on. The Republicans are, thankfully, it looks like, working on self-destruction. But it would have been more profoundly true if the conservative had won, because then Dick Armey and Sarah Palin and Tim Pawlenty and all the rest of these guys would have been acting to get as far right conservative as possible, and therefore turn off, I think, the voters who really matter in the middle.
Well,
as it stands, that may still happen, but I think it would have been more profoundly true had the conservative won.
You know, we Democrats have a habit of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Right.
If we're not careful, we're going to do that. On the other hand, the Republicans are the party of no. I mean, every time an idea comes up, Bonner gets on the tube and says no.
That's right.
And the interesting thing is that if you are a Republican and you have a job, it's socialized medicine. If you lose your job, it's universal health care.
Yeah. It's like that old saw If somebody in the next state loses his job, it's a recession. If your brother-in-law loses, I'm not sure I'm getting this right. If your brother-in-law loses his job, it's a depression. And if you lose your job, the country's coming apart.
That's it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Republicans who are thinking in terms of universal health care now instead of socialized medicine.
Sure. Or are becoming Democrats.
Because
of the loss of jobs. Speaking of universal health care and the health care debate that's going on, what do you think of what's happening in terms of the so-called health care reform bill or bills?
Well, I don't know what the bills are. I have read and studied and looked, and I read 3 newspapers a day and things like that. But if you ask me what they are made up of and how much each person pays or what, I don't know. I haven't seen a good, solid outline of each proposal yet. And I think that's one of the major problems that Congress and the president has right now in presenting them. They haven't presented anything that anybody understands.
Okay. I think there's some merit to what you say. Although there have been general outlines drawn, although very vaguely. As you know, I'm not telling you anything new, that the bills that are now going forward that are being brought up by the Democrats provide a public option that is a government-run company presumably for those who don't have or can't get other insurance. But it's certainly not real clear, real specified on that. Your point is certainly well made.
There's one other thing, if I can interrupt you, that I haven't heard. And I would have liked to have heard by now. And that's the fact that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, there are so many problems with the way this thing has been presented. But and I'll get to one part of that in terms of the economics, again, your field, in a minute. But I was just talking not so much economics as the math, more correctly. But what I was going to ask you is, what your view is in terms of single payer and how the Democrats handled the beginning of the health care financing reform debate?
Well, I don't see a problem with single payer. I mean, the only problem Medicare has is the way it is being financed. It's not paying its own way.
Right.
But it pays right on time. It's very efficient. You know, if you get sick, you go to a doctor. He fills out a form, he sends it to Medicare, he gets paid, and you get your medicine.
And a story.
And I don't see what's wrong with that.
Right.
Except the insurance companies have a problem. They're not going to make any money.
Pity.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah, really. But how is it you think that they handled, they being the Democrats and the president in particular, handled the debate at the start in terms of what they offered and what they sponsored?
I think there was a need for leadership, and I don't think Barack Obama provided it. His, I don't know, I'm not an expert, and I'm not real smart, but I think his concept of it was you throw it in the middle and let them all run around, and it comes out a beautiful apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he threw it in the middle and let them all run around, and nothing's come out yet.
Yeah. Well, my opinion, frankly, is that the first thing that should have happened is that there should have been single payer offered, and somehow get around Max Baucus and have a single payer plan. Then, if push came to shove, you get to a compromise which may not be single payer, but you know would have something akin to that. At least that should have been in the mix. Do you disagree?
No, I agree. That's really what, in a sort of obtuse way, I was referring to. I mean, and that would have been leadership. It would have been him saying, "Now look, this is what I think it ought to be. Now you tell me why it shouldn't be."
Yeah. Let me take a moment, do my own commercial here for 1 second, and then we'll come back. And for those of you who are interested in being a real estate investor but may not have a lot of money, I've written a book. The book is called Mobile Millionaire and involves mobile home investment. And if you'd like to take a look at the book, see some excerpts, and be able to read part of it, you can do that at tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. And we're back with Jerry. Were you listening avidly, by the way?
Oh, God, on every word.
Hanging on every syllable. Except those syllables were too good for hanging.
I could just see Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz whirling around and everything.
I wish people would stop mentioning that image.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I just had to.
Yeah, I understand. Well, except for the one listener we have in Kansas. We're not in Kansas anymore.
Oh, they're not even in Kansas anymore.
That's right. That's right. What's your view now of, it's absolutely an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. The worst that can happen is that we'll both be wrong. What's your view in terms of who the Republicans are likely to nominate in 12?
Oh, God, I don't know. I keep hoping it's Palin.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be willing to contribute to her campaign if I thought it would get her nominated. I honestly don't know. I look at the people who are supposed front runners and such, and I'm embarrassed for them. I really am. I mean, I don't hear any ideas. I don't hear any concepts. I hear nothing in terms of what is Bush number one used to say, that vision thing. I don't hear any of that from the Republicans. And that's sad, because what we're talking about is we need two parties that really come up with ideas to move the country forward, and we don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, to be honest with you, my feeling is we need one party to come up with ideas to move the country forward, and then the Republicans.
That's what we've got now.
Yeah, well, and that's okay, because it means that, you know, we could have an ongoing Democratic majority for an appreciable period. I don't know that that'll happen, but if they keep doing that, I think it could. One of the things, as you know, that Republicans seem to have a very good inclination to do, and Democrats have other issues, but one of the things that Republicans tend to do is they tend to, at various times, get really extreme and lose and be out of power for a long time. They did it in 64, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it during the administration of Bush 43. And the result of that, of course, is what we have now, both the bad parts and the fact that Democrats got elected. Democrats got elected because things were so bad, in large part.
Yeah, and also there was a vacuum on the other side. You know,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't just bad. There was nothing there. It was, and nature abhors a vacuum. The end result was the Democrats got elected.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if you remember the polling, but prior to the financial meltdown, when Obama had already been nominated, but prior to the Lehman Brothers thing and all of that, my recollection of the polling is that McCain was ahead.
Yes.
And after that, things started to turn around. And, you know, there's always the danger of saying that after something happened, or because something happened after another event, that the first was the cause of the second, and we can never know that. But it looked like that the financial meltdown was in large part responsible for the Democrats winning. Do you disagree?
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with you on that. I think there were a couple of factors. I think McCain picking Sarah Palin took away votes.
Certainly a factor.
And probably took away more votes than most Republicans would like to admit.
Yeah.
And
well,
I think
when she was first nominated,
himself,
of course, when she was first nominated, it increased their numbers. It was only after people listened to her that the numbers went down.
That was the next day.
No, I will tell you, there's a fellow I know here in town, a very conservative guy, and nobody, you know, just a friend of mine. And yes, it's true, liberals and conservatives can be friends, but anyway, but he is very eager to tell anybody who will listen that the only reason he decided to vote for McCain was because he chose Palin,
mm-hmm.
which is
okay.
Scary.
Yeah, that makes me, no, it's typical.
Well, the fact is, there really is a rift in the Republican Party. I mean, there's been a rift in the Republican Party for decades, but it was a softer line for a long time between the, I guess you would call them the club Republicans, the business Republicans, and the social Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And the social Republicans, the religious right, has largely taken over the party. But they are really adamant now about excluding the less immoderate Republicans, based on what we just saw in New York.
I don't see them as socially conservative. I see them as radically right.
That's right.
You know, we had a group of people here who called themselves Republicans who wanted to take Barry Goldwater's name off of the state Republican office.
Because?
He was too liberal.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not joking. I mean, so can you imagine a group of people, and Barry Goldwater is probably one of the greater statesmen of the Republican Party as far as Republicans are concerned. They wanted to remove his name.
Yeah. And he was obviously conservative. In fact, he wrote the book called Conscience of a Conservative.
Uh-huh.
And was largely responsible for Reagan in one sense.
Exactly. And the Republicans that are the what they call the conservative right, they're not conservative and they're not even right. They're so radical, it's frightening.
Absolutely.
They're the ones that carry guns to Obama rallies, and as you drive along the freeway it says kill Obama. These people are not part of the mainstream. They're just scary.
Yeah, besides the fear that we all have about violence against the president or other politicians, and that fear is ongoing because of the nutcases that are out there, this is the kind of animosity that arose in the early 60s. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that Obama will be the victim of violence, and we certainly hope not. But the fact is that, as I know you know, before Kennedy went to Dallas, there was an ad taken out, a full-page ad taken in the, I guess it was the Dallas Morning News, that recommended violence against the president.
Yeah, I know. I was in Texas at the time. I saw him the day before he was killed. Yes.
You saw Kennedy the day before he was killed?
Yeah, I was in San Antonio working for the firm, cleaning up a problem in the office, and he drove by in an open In the open Lincoln with his with Jackie, and I turned to this fellow I was standing next to, and I said, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of for somebody just to take a pot shot at him. It was probably 25 yards away from me. Next day he was gone.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact is, there is a very polarized atmosphere in the United States today, which may or may not result in what we all fear. But the fact is, it is resulting in some very weird behavior and in some activity in terms of violence, at least violent discussion. These town hall meetings, which granted were a put-up job, but still there were people who showed up who were in fact inclined to violence. And these same people were involved in the campaign of McCain, although McCain attempted at the very end to stop it, where they were talking about killing the Muslim.
There's a bill in the Arizona House right now to allow teachers to carry guns in the classrooms to protect their students in case someone attacks them. Now,
yeah, it sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I sort of thought it was, too.
Well, the rest of the country may not realize this, but there was a law passed here, and again, I know you know this, there was a law passed here. First off, this is a state where people can carry guns pretty easily. There are rules limiting your right to conceal a weapon, but if you can get, I don't even know if you need a permit, but you can carry the gun as long as it's open pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
But they did prohibit it for a long time in bars. Now that's no longer the case. The bar owner has the right to prohibit them, but if the bar owner doesn't, you can walk into a bar with your gun perfectly legally.
No, I know. It's a joke. You think it was a joke, but it's not. It's like a reality show gone mad.
Yeah. We have state legislators who think, and a governor, who think it's a good idea to mix alcohol with gun with firearms.
Well, wouldn't be bad if they just kept it among themselves. But,
Well, unfortunately, Democrats drink too, but and sometimes with reason. But that basically is it. By the way, I wanted to mention that we, believe it or not, we've been talking for almost 45 minutes.
Oh my God!
And exactly. And it's gone very quickly. We have about 4 minutes left in the show. And so before I forget, I want to thank you very much. This has been great for me. I hope you've enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
Thank you. We'll be talking until very near the end. But just as a reminder, we've been talking with Jerry Gettinger. Am I pronouncing that right, or is it Gettinger?
Yeah, Gettinger.
Okay. With Jerry Gettinger, who, among other things, is the president of the Arizona chapter of the National Jewish Democratic Council. He has a degree in economics from the Wharton School, which is located at the University of Pennsylvania, for the three people who don't know that. And was there something in particular that made you decide to study economics as opposed to any one of a million other things that I'm sure you would have done well at?
I've been trading the market since I was 16, and it just seemed like a natural thing. And at that time, economics was basically Keynesian. There were no computers at that time. As a matter of fact, the computer was invented at the University of Pennsylvania School of Electrical Engineering. It was in the basement. It was in the basement there. I remember going down there and looking at it.
I was going to say, they needed the whole basement for the computers in those days.
That's right, and it could only run for a short time because it had tubes. It would get too hot. So, getting off the subject, but it just seemed like a natural progression for me, and I really enjoy it.
Well, you just mentioned something I wanted to go into. I'm not sure we have enough time, but let's give it a quick shot. If you can explain briefly what Keynesian economics is.
Well, it's basically the government controls the economy. When things slow down, government puts money into the economy and it primes the pump and businesses get going. And when inflation starts rearing its head, the government raises interest rates and it calms down inflation and things continue along a straight line. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked this time because of one thing. The banks haven't loaned the money out. They've kept it to themselves.
Yes, or arguably hasn't worked yet. We don't know. Anyway, I'm going to, because we just have about 2 minutes left and I want to wind up a little bit, I want to go ahead and let you go. Actually, I don't want to let you go, but I'm going to let you go. And,
thanks a lot, Jeff.
Oh, thank you, Jerry. I hope we have a chance to meet face to face, and it's been a pleasure. And again, I'm sorry that. I'm not sorry that no one joined us on the phone, because that meant I got to talk to you. So, thanks again. I hope you've all enjoyed, Jerry, and we'll talk soon. Thank you, Jerry.
You take care. Bye bye.
You too. Bye bye. And for those of you who are still with us, we've got about a minute left. Want to let you know again. Next week, we start a half hour earlier, which will be 6:30 Pacific, 7:30 Mountain, 8:30 Central, and 9:30 on the East Coast. And if you're in Eastern Canada, you're on your own. We have a full 90 seconds left, which is good. It gives me the opportunity to tell you that next week our guest will be a writer, an author by the name of Mabel Leo, who has written a number of books, and included in that is a book about a restaurateur. No N in that word, by the way, here in this state. But the story that she has to tell will be interesting to you, I guarantee it, in as much as it involves organized crime and business, and it should be fascinating. I think you'll enjoy it. If you have any guests to suggest, you can drop me a note at jb720@cox.net. And let me urge you again to look at tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire, along with jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. I want to thank you for joining us. If you're listening on the archive, we are on Thursday nights 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern, beginning next week, or after you've heard this show. This will be our last show at a different time. So beginning next week, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. Thanks very much. We'd be thrilled and pleased if you joined us next week and all our future weeks. We would.